Dear Penthouse Forum, I always thought your letters were made up. Until one day, when I was 14 years old, I went camping with some friends. As I like to proudly state, at the time I went to junior high, my school was reportedly the largest junior high in the country. My sixth grade class at the Interlochen Elementary had about 30 people in it, and they were basically the same 30 people that had been in it since kindergarten. My seventh grade class, however, had 800 people in it. There were 2,500 kids spread across three grades in one large, hellish adolescent compound. And there was something about my class that seemed particularly bad. We had a couple of teachers quit during my seventh grade year, and the district madly scrambled around to fill the vacancies. My 8th grade English teacher, in a school this size, there were half a dozen 8th grade English teachers teaching six classes a day, was an elderly, joyless woman patiently working her final year before retirement. She was dead meat. We were so bad, so rambunctious and disrespectful that we made her quit at Christmas. Say we, but of course I don't mean me. I was always an embarrassingly good and well-behaved student, but my classmates were terrors. By that point, filling out her pension had become considerably less important to her than getting the hell away from us, and we were greeted on the first day back from Christmas break with a message written on the board that we would have a new teacher for the rest of the year, Miss Something or Other. Class buzzed with speculation about who the new teacher would be. The fact that it was a miss was encouraging. Maybe she'd be a babe like Mrs. C, the foxy 23-year-old English teacher that my best friends Mel and Lenore were fortunate enough to be assigned to. Keith, the guy who used to sit in front of me and then turn around and bite my pencil or pull my bookmark out of my book while taunting, "Confucius say pickle makes squishy bookmark," was especially fervent in his hopes for some pretty young thing. Be careful what you wish for, Keith. When the bell rang, our new teacher walked in, and you could hear a collective gasp from all the guys. She was drop-dead gorgeous, with a tight skirt and a loose top. The temperature must have gone up several degrees as 15 pimply adolescent boys struggled to gain control of their momboing hormones. So close to me, no place I'd rather you be than with me. What was worse was that she knew she was hot, and she wasn't afraid to use her powers for evil. It was the perfect way to control the class, as all the boys immediately fell into stunned silence and stayed that way for the entire semester. Her short skirts and billowing blouses, especially as she leaned over to help you, and believe me, we never needed so much help in our lives, subverted all the rambunctious antisocial behavior that our class was known for, and turned all the worst troublemakers into the most attentive students. And poor Keith had it bad. Every time she crossed her legs and adjusted her skirt, you could hear him let out a small, tortured groan. He was always the first one in the room and the last one out, soaking up as much of her raw animal sexuality as he could stand. She, of course, knew this and used it to just torture him. One day, near the end of the year, we had a spelling bee. The way she ran them was to have everybody stand up around the perimeter of the class and take turns spelling words. If you missed one, you sat down, and it continued until there was only one person left. In standard spelling bee format, our teacher would say the word, use it in a sentence, and then repeat the word. When it came time for Keith, who was standing next to me, she turned towards him and licked her lips. Quiver, she said, looking into his eyes. He makes my body quiver. And then, almost a whisper, quiver. Poor Keith. He flushed and stammered and mumbled, K, W, and then ran for his seat. Happy to fail and not let his condition become visible. As it turned out, I won that particular game when I correctly spelled cunnilingus. Just kidding. The next year, when I was 14, my friends Mel and Lenore invited me to go camping with them one summer's eve. This was something we had been doing more of recently, and I eagerly jumped at the chance.
Raven hair and ruby lips, sparks fly from her fingertips, echoed voices in the night, she's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh, witchy woman, she got the moon in her eyes.
The reason it had rapidly become a lot more popular was not that we had suddenly awoken to the wonders of the outdoors. Growing up in rural Michigan, we were all pretty familiar with the natural world already. It had more to do with the fact that we were all going through puberty, and the opportunity to sleep together and perhaps cop the occasional feel was very enticing. So I showed up at the appropriate campsite and found Mel and Lenore sitting around the campfire with Mrs. C. I knew they had all become friends during 8th grade and stayed friends after graduation, but I was still surprised to see her there. I knew who she was, and she had met me a few times, and had burned herself into my overheated imagination with an offhand remark one morning about how she couldn't scratch herself in a particular spot because she was in public. I settled down next to the fire and joined the circle. It was a beautiful night, and we spent many hours intently discussing, passionately arguing, and poignantly confessing our hopes, dreams, and fears. Mel kept singing this Eagles song that was stuck in her head, repeating the phrase, "But you only want the ones that you can't get," over and over throughout the evening.
I like the way sparkling earrings lay against your skin.
It was one of those magical, intimate nights when all's right with the world, and I never wanted it to end.
And I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight, with a billion stars all around, 'cause I got a peaceful, easy feeling, and I know you won't let me down, 'cause I'm already standing on the ground.
Eventually, though, we were full of food and tired of talking, so we crawled into the tent. I took my place between Mel and Mrs. C and settled down and waited and waited and waited until I was sure everybody was asleep. Then I reached my hand over and slowly and carefully as possible, I gently laid it on Mrs. C's t-shirt right over her left breast. I was praying that she was asleep, for I could never explain what I was doing. I knew it was wrong, but I just didn't care. My sexual curiosity was too great, and I just had to carpe breastum. Imagine my surprise when she suddenly rolled over on top of me and began kissing me. I was terrified and exhilarated beyond belief, but my excitement was short-lived as she burst into tears and started whispering, "I'm sorry," over and over again in my ear. Confused, aroused, and feeling very much like a little boy, I patted her on the back and tried to make her feel better. She fell asleep, and I lay there perfectly still, twisting in the wind, thrilled and scared and excited and confused and elated and depressed. As soon as the sky started turning gray, I slipped out of the tent and walked home, the Eagles ringing in my ears. The Eagles are the quintessential American band, not only in name, but also in style. There had been some previous attempts to merge country and rock, the father and son of American music, together with jazz, the Holy Spirit, to varying degrees of success.
This old town, filled with sin, it'll swallow you in if you've got some money to burn.
It was a tantalizing possibility that lay just beyond reach for many years. Tantalizing because the fan bases for those two styles were huge and, traditionally, had very little crossover. If somebody could find just the right balance and tap into both markets, they could reach a level of financial and popular success that could only be dreamed of.
This old earthquake's gonna leave me in the poorhouse. It seems like this whole town's insane. On the 31st floor, a gold-plated door won't keep out the Lord's burning rain.
The Flying Burrito Brothers tried, but they never really took off. Never underestimate the value of a good name. Linda Ronstadt walked the line pretty successfully for a few years, but never really blew up. But her backing band, who became the Eagles, got it just right.
City girls just seem to find
They combined the familiar idioms of country with the energy and excitement of rock, and carefully balanced just the right amount of sincere nostalgia with skeptical cynicism to keep almost everybody engaged. And almost everybody was engaged at some point or another. Although it's cool to hate the Eagles, most people must confess to liking at least a couple of their songs. You can't. Desperado is their most famous and most popular ballad, and part of their popularity must be attributed to the fact that they could pull off these lonely country ballads with absolutely no hint of irony, which must have helped endear them to the country crowd immeasurably.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one.
The song is beautifully crafted, both musically and lyrically. They mine the rich vein of American mythology especially well on this track, referencing the lonesome, ruggedly independent cowboy out riding fences, and even manage to slip in a little poker analogy in the middle.
Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your.
My favorite aspect of this song, and the one that just bolsters its quintessential Americanness to me, is something that isn't even part of the song at all. I used to like to try to make seamless DJ mixes using an old four-track cassette deck. I didn't have two turntables and a microphone that were the trade tools of DJs, but I loved using my four-track to blend different musics together.
Don't you feel-
On one tape, I had segued into Desperado and was trying to figure out what to blend it with when it suddenly occurred to me that the ending was very similar to the beginning of Ray Charles' version of Georgia on My Mind. I dug out a copy and played it against the ending of Desperado and was stunned to discover that it was not only the same relative chord progression, it was also in the same key and virtually the same tempo. I still have that mixtape and stop whatever I'm doing whenever it's on to listen to the beautiful melding of these two iconic slices of Americana.
Too late.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
The Eagles spawned many hits and got bigger and bigger as time went on. Eventually, after The Long Run, which has some surprisingly weird tracks on it, such as Those Shoes and The Greeks Don't Want No Freaks, they broke up and went their own separate and highly profitable ways. Joe Walsh, Don Henley, and Glenn Frey all had very successful solo careers after the band broke up, and even though they swore it would never happen, they did get back together again for a reunion tour and an album, called, ironically, or insincerely enough, Hell Freezes Over. The reformation of the Eagles was enough to earn the band the legendary status that the successful blending of rock and country promised. Shortly after their reunion tour, the first volume of their greatest hits became the biggest-selling album of all time, cementing their reputation, for better or worse, as the ultimate expression of American popular music.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? Come down from your fences.
The wind-blown soul of Desperado's lonesome cowboy followed me home that dark morning. As I plodded through the gray woods, Mrs. C's tears damp on my shirt, the second nail pounded into my sexual coffin.
Never let somebody...